Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Keep Talking podcast, with me, your host, Adam Grattan, brought to you by Staffordshire University in partnership with Expert Citizens. In the previous episode, we caught up with members of the Keep Talking community research team to hear how creativity is used to support their work being carried out and how those creative practices have, throughout lockdown, benefited both the community researchers in their lives and the local communities they've been working in to make the Keep Talking project a success. This time around, we shine the spotlight on friendship, the importance of it in the lives of those involved in the project, how it has helped them and how they are using their lived experiences to build friendships with the communities they support and work in. Amongst those for whom this topic has been a priority is Rose Brooks, a member of Expert Citizens and a community researcher, who herself found isolation and the lack of social interaction tough during lockdown, and who sees the benefits friendship can bring when carrying out community research.
It makes me, I know it sounds selfish, but it makes me feel good in myself because I feel as though I'm being able to give something back because I've been brought from the brink of death, literally, like when I was with Brighter Futures. I was in hospital for over 4 weeks. So giving something back and helping other people through the research makes me feel as though I'm actually doing something. Because I've been doing, like, asking my friends and stuff as well, their opinions, they've actually become better friends because we've related with conversations and things. So, like, if they've had mental health issues and so on and so forth, we've actually sat down and talked about it.
So you felt that you've had, because you've got an experience of the things you've had to deal with and go through, and other people have, it's given that closer bond and that empathy to understand each other.
Yeah, it's actually, because we isolated, because we're on the second floor of flats, we isolated the old flats. I called it the strip. So everybody in the strip has been able to mingle with each other because we didn't, how can I explain it? It's like everybody being in a nursing home, they can all mingle together because they're isolated together. So we did our balcony so that we could all still talk and interact with each other. So it hasn't been that hard for us, to be honest. The mental side of things have, but actually getting a closer bond, because we would never have done it before. People commented on how we just sort of like bobbed in and out and just went hi, bye sort of thing.
Yeah.
But no, we all know each other pretty well. And it's been really nice as well that I've been accepted as well because of me being like a newbie sort of thing to this trip. But no, it makes me feel good that I can give something. Working with others, it sort of makes you feel good. It gives you this nice, warm, fuzzy feeling in your stomach sort of thing. But it's helped me out. If I've had any stress or, run out of a cup of milk or something or another, do you know what I mean? They'll be there automatically. And it's like, if you feel sad about something, you can just go round and put the kettle on. And it's really, really helped me out, to be honest.
So how do you think both individuals and the groups you're involved with, these communities that you've been working and being involved with and researching, can benefit from projects like Keep Talking and the work they're doing with Expert Citizens?
Before lockdown, it'd get you out and about because you'd be meeting people, meeting new faces, and it's just gives you, it just makes you feel so, like I said, like you're doing something. And a lot of people don't realise that when they say community research, you're saying, oh God, to go around with the clipboard and blah, blah, blah. But it's not like that. And most people I know that when we've interviewed and stuff, at the end, they turned around and said, oh, cheers for that, actually, because being able to talk, even though it's answering like a question sort of thing, it's like opening up, it's like therapy.
What do you think can or needs to be done to support individuals and communities as we're coming out of lockdown?
I think the government should take advantage of us, really, because we've got the knowledge and the know-how. And you can't, doctors and things can only read from a book and tell you you're depressed. But we can actually turn around and say our stories, like some drugs, alcohol, domestic violence. And stuff. We can turn around and say, yeah, well, we can relate to that and help them to come through it.
Darren Marinus, who is the chief executive of Expert Citizens and who himself has had to deal with a number of challenging ordeals during his life, told me it was his desire to change his life which brought him into contact with one person in particular, who he went on to call friend, and how, through his own lived experience, he sees friendship as being integral to such community research projects as Keep Talking.
How did I get here? Well, quite an interesting story. So I was born in the 70s with a visual impairment, learning difficulties. I was placed into a special needs school, as it was called back then. Actually, it was called a school for spastics at the age of six. This was a few hundred miles away from my family home here in Stoke-on-Trent. And it was a difficult time. I went to this place. I was told it was going to be for a short period of time till local schools were able to help someone like me. That short period of time, unfortunately, happened to be for around 11 years. In that time, I experienced all sorts of stuff, from positive stuff, but also from a lot of childhood traumas and witnessed and you know, sort of survived some horrible stuff, you know, stuff we have been reading about over the last few years, stuff like Jimmy Savile and stuff like that. I experienced it, I witnessed some of that stuff, but also recognizing actually I also did stuff which I would never have done at a perceived normal school at that time. But being kept in this sort of bubble, and when I came to leave at the age of 17, I had no real social skills. I had no sort of educational skills or qualifications that my disabilities were letting me down. And I struggled to hold any sort of job down whatsoever, really struggled. But I also struggled to find any sort of support to help me to hold a job down. And it was really difficult. And my mental health at the time was really, really, you know, was really, really failing me. I felt more and more depressed. I wanted to take my own life. I couldn't see the point of living. Also, my sort of family connections and my relationship with my mother, my brother and sister, because I was kept away from them for 11 years, didn't exist anymore. It just wasn't there. And I really struggled, and I found a crutch, and that, unfortunately, that crutch was using drugs and alcohol. It made me feel better. It took me away from them dark moments of where I wanted to take my own life. Unfortunately, you know, the getting involved in stuff like that sort of actually damaged my mental health even more, but also got me involved in things I'm not very proud of. And I got involved, you know, to support the drug and alcohol addiction into low-level crime, which over years built up to more serious crimes. And then I was involved quite heavily in organised crime in North Staffordshire. And like every drug dealer and most drug dealers, and we should all be, we all got caught and got sent to prison for 4.5 years. I sort of knew before I was going into prison that I wanted to do, and I wanted to actually change. I wanted I looked at prison actually not so much as a punishment, like some people would, but actually as an opportunity that I've had experience being locked away and told what to do for 11 years of my life. So going into prison, you could say I fitted into that regime like a hand in a perfectly fitting glove, you could say I was a model prisoner because I had that built into me from a very young age, a very early age as a child. But actually my hopes and dreams of trying to change were sort of dashed at every turn and opportunity I tried to create for myself in prison. That unfortunately, someone with a visual impairment who may need a bit of help with reading and writing can't access the support. There is no support that, you know, that prison staff and prisons are, you know, are working on the bare minimum. They're on sort of cliff edge sort of ways of working. And unfortunately, I was locked away for 23 hours a day, every day, till I nearly came to the last 12 months of my sentence, and I was sent to a an open prison. And they had an education unit there, which I was going up every day for quite a number of weeks and months, and being very persistent, a bit too persistent. Sometimes I would even get myself in trouble for being so persistent, asking to get educated, asking for some sort of help. Unfortunately, you know, they couldn't offer the support I needed. But there was one teacher there who ran a sort of kookery classes, basic kookery classes for prisoners who were coming up for their release. And he sort of said, listen, I keep seeing you come up here every day. You know, you're damn persistent. So obviously you want to do something to you, and we're failing you. But I'm going to let you come into my class. Over, you know, the people said, you've got a visual impairment. Don't let him in the kitchen. It's health and safety, this. But I'm going to take that risk. I'll make sure you're okay. And he gave me that opportunity. And within 3 weeks, he gave me the keys to that kitchen to run classes for him. He noticed I had a sort of a talent working with other prisoners. He noticed that I could be a good peer mentor. And actually, you know, I was trustworthy, even though I was in prison, but that I could be trusted. And that guy sort of, you know, showed me that things could be different. So I was full of enthusiasm, and I was full of energy, and I wanted to change the world, and I wanted to do so much when I left prison. But unfortunately, reality hit me full force in the face that I came out of prison winter time, 2012-2013, and straight away I found myself on the streets of Stoke-on-Strent, homeless. And that was really difficult, that I kept away from all the trouble in prison. You know, the one thing is with prison, it's like a university in itself, a university of criminology, that if you wanted to learn about other crimes, that is quite easier to do. It's more easy in rehabilitating yourself sometimes. But I didn't go down that path, and it felt that for 4 odd years that I was trying to change, then suddenly it came out and reality hit. And I was on the streets begging for food and for money. And then I was fortunate enough to get picked up by a couple of local charities who helped me and put me in supported housing, shared accommodation, which was difficult in itself, that I wanted to change and other people in that accommodation were on different journeys to myself. And that was quite difficult to manage. And yet again, my mental health started to fail me. But yet again, I met another amazing person who actually was a support worker for me at a time from a charity in Stoke-on-Trent. And we built up a positive relationship. The most positive relationship I've probably built with a support worker who have had many support workers over the years. And but she treated me different. She didn't ask all the deficit stuff. She didn't talk about risk assessments. She didn't talk about my former crimes. She talked about what I wanted to do in the future. She talked about what goals or dreams or aspirations I had. And that for me was something different, that mostly in my life that people have always concentrated on the negatives, which is understandable sometimes. But for me to move on in my life, the negatives, you know, we needed not to sort of concentrate on them too much, but concentrate on the skills I did have and the positives. And I got invited to a workshop one day, and I've attended hundreds of bloody workshops in my life. But why did I attend this one? And the truth is, because someone was offering some free food and 20 quid. And I had no money. And so I went. And I met this guy. And I'm still friends with this guy now. And he was a guy who was 100 miles an hour. He was jumping around the room, and he had so much energy and inspiration. And he was sort of saying that all them life experiences I had aren't for nothing, that actually you could shape things and use them experiences in such a way that others may not experience what you've experienced in the past. And I really sort of brought into it and got it. And I got what he was talking about. And we're still friends today. In fact, I was a guest at his wedding last year, and I really did get it, and I really did get the power of lived and life experience, and how that can be harnessed and used for change.
Community researcher Simon Bamford has himself had to deal with homelessness, raising a son who is on the autistic spectrum, and the breakdown of a relationship. He spoke to me about how in the face of such challenges, he believes a friend is one of the most important things you can have. And how for him, it has meant more than just having a person to talk to. It has been a lifeline.
If I was either on my own or if I was still homeless during lockdown, I can't imagine what it'd be like being homeless. You know, that would have been terrible. Different. Well, I think the worst thing, and this is, I mean, in terms of isolation, I probably have got a bit more experience, because actually having a disabled child who, you know, smashed things in the supermarket shelves, if you took him in a cafe and smashed stuff, we ended up isolated for like 5 or 6 years anyway. And then during the homelessness, that the worst part about life of staying in a van was the times when you were on your own and the isolation. So when it came to this isolation, really, it wasn't anything that new to me, because I had, you know, isolation in a couple of, I had isolation with Johnny for 6 years, and then, as I say, in the van. Thankfully for me, I don't think I was ever pushed over the edge, but I had people who would help and did help. So I wasn't utterly isolated, and whereas some people are.
Where do you think friendship sits in all that, and how's that
impacted
with you?
Yeah, I think massive, because a lot of people, myself, I, with the end of the relationship and the other troubles with it, you know, you got people in your family and you think they know it inside out, and they're quoting your problems and they're giving you advice, and actually they ain't even got all the details. So your friends can understand you more, and of course a lot of people don't have it. At that time, I didn't want anything to do with my family. So without friendship, I wouldn't have really been talking to anyone. And there are people out there who need help and that, who don't have anything to do with the family for whatever reason. I mean, they may have annoyed the family that much to death, or, you know, something like that. But that's not really our business why they've fallen out. But it is a terrible thing. If you haven't got your family, you've got your friends, haven't you? So without friendship, I think we're all knackered.
How is that friendship circle change for yourself, and how's it supported you in any particular ways?
I certainly found out who the real mates were, and the circles, why, you know, sorry, narrowed a lot more. The circles narrowed a lot more, I think. They say in times like that, don't you? Cliche, maybe, you find out who your real friends are, but it's true, you do. You do. Essential friendship is. It is for me anyway, you know. If you haven't got your family, you kind of, friends and family you pick, aren't they, rather? So without them, yeah, I'd have been hopeless, really, I guess.
Well, that's all from me and the Keep Talking podcast this time around. Be sure to tune in to the next episode, when we'll be hearing from more of the community research team about family, inclusion, and just why being part of a community is so important, especially when carrying out research to help it. Until then, you can keep up to date with all the goings-on from the Keep Talking project by going to Twitter and searching for #KeepTalkingStats. Thanks for listening.